Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
The owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American Dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
I'll lead an effective strategy to mobilize true international effort to pressure.
Mark Reardon.
So in the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Well, good afternoon. As we get rolling here for a Thursday edition. Wait, is it Wednesday or Thursday?
Wednesday.
See, that was just fake news right there. It's one of those things where, honestly, I did not know the answer to that question just briefly, because it's been a crazy day. I went and saw Dr. Anna Smith today in a dentist appointment.
How'd it go?
I love dentist appointments, Andrew. Let me tell you how much I love dentist appointments. But she was great, the whole team over there. And it was a little embarrassing because, like, if I had to pinpoint the last time I went to a dentist, I know it hasn't been in the last 7 years. I'm hoping it has been in the last 8 years. Or 9 years, maybe not 10. I'm not exactly sure. Sue, how are you this afternoon?
I am fine, thank you.
Have you been to the dentist recently?
Probably been a year.
Yeah, I need some work too, unfortunately. So that's going to be something that's going to happen. You know, it's Cinco de Mayo. Did you guys notice that yesterday I never once said "May the 4th be with you"? Because I think that's about the dumbest thing that I've ever heard. And I just, that kind of stuff drives me crazy. And I know people are all into Star Wars and everything. Buffa had a pretty good tweet this morning where he said it was like a little meme that said all the Star Wars movies are overrated, which kind of they are. You know,
sure,
you can appreciate for what they are, but they're a bit overrated. But these are actual, I'm going to get to some politics and this House leadership thing, but I had to toss this out. Cinco de Mayo is today. It's, you know, I don't know how many people take it as serious as maybe they should, just celebrating Mexican heritage, things along those lines. It basically is an excuse for Americans to drink margaritas, right?
Yeah.
Essentially. These are actual questions and terms searched on Google about Cinco de Mayo, which, by the way, is a bigger deal here than it is in Mexico, which
yes,
shouldn't surprise people. Here's a question. When is Cinco de Mayo?
No.
Yes. Cinco equals 5 de Mayo of May. So that would be May 5th. That's today. When is Cinco de Mayo 2021?
Okay.
In fairness, those are probably different people that are asking the when is Cinco de Mayo. They just threw the year in. And that's May 5th still. It is still May 5th. When is Cinco de Mayo 2019? That is also on May 5th. When is Cinco de Mayo in Spanish? Or no, I'm sorry. What is Cinco de Mayo in Spanish?
Okay. All right. Maybe you took French. All right.
Let's see here. Is Cinco de Mayo the dead of the dead, or the day of the dead? Because Day of the Dead is different, right?
Muerta. I think so. Yeah, it's Dios de las Muertas.
Yes. It says, here's the response here. Little skulls made and decorated with sugar are gifts during Day of the Dead, not Cinco de Mayo. Little skulls, let's see here. It's a three-day holiday. Day of the Dead is a three-day holiday in which families across Mexico gather to remember deceased friends. Have you ever seen Coco? That's a great movie.
Yes, it was. That's
excellent.
Where I learned about that,
really, really,
sadly.
Really good. Where is Cinco de Mayo? Well, the answer to that is wherever you want it to be. It could be at your home tonight.
Yeah. Anywhere you feel like.
It could be a state of mind.
All right.
let's see here. There was one here. Oh, yeah, this
where
is my favorite.
Where is Cinco de Mayo?
No, this is my favorite. Is Cinco de Mayo about mayonnaise?
Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo. Yes. Hey, the part of House leadership is in town today. Steve Scalise is in the area. He's, of course, the minority whip. And I was talking with Congresswoman Wagner last night. I found out that he was in town. We were hoping to get him on here this afternoon. That's not going to happen. Now, let me just take a guess at why that's not going to happen. I think he's busy. They're busy. But I also think it's not going to happen because of all these questions that are going on right now with House leadership and Liz Cheney and everything along those lines. Let me explain that to you just a little bit here this afternoon and give a little perspective. And I think it's important because Kevin McCarthy, who is the minority leader, was caught on a hot mic talking about Liz Cheney. This has been building up ever since January 6th, of course. And now the question is Liz Cheney going to stay in this position, third in command in the Republican Party? Here's McCarthy.
I think she's got real problems. I've had it with her. It's, you know, I've lost confidence. Well, someone just has to bring a motion, but I assume that will probably take place.
I guess that was a phone conversation, so it's pretty clear this is going to take place probably a week from today. I was driving in, and when I am tooling around the area, and I was tooling around the area quite a bit because I went to Godfrey, Illinois today for the dentist appointment.
Holy cow.
I flip on, not listen to music sometimes, I listen to 97.1, but I also flip on CNN and Fox because I want to make sure that I'm on top of everything that's happening. And I happened to leave my house a few hours ago, and I heard this guy. I didn't even know who he was. I just tuned in. This is a guy named Mark McKinnon, who's a former Bush and McCain advisor. And so he's a Republican. Now, I don't agree with much of what he says here, but I do agree with part of it, and I want to explain. But this is what I heard him say just a couple hours ago on CNN.
I really feel, Allison, like I'm witnessing the death of the Republican Party, certainly as I've known it in my lifetime. I mean, consider the facts of this situation. Liz Cheney is twice as conservative as Elise Stefanik. Liz Cheney has voted for Donald Trump twice as often as Elise Stefanik. The only reason that Stefanik is taking the leadership post away from Liz Cheney is because Liz Cheney is one of the few Republicans with a remaining backbone that will stand up and tell the truth about what happened on January 6th. And that's the only reason. So in order to be a member in good standing of the Republican Party today, you have to be willing to lie about what happened on January 6th.
Okay, part of what he says there is true, and I'll address the part that's true in just a second. But the listen to what he says at the beginning here.
I really feel, Allison, like I'm witnessing the death of the Republican Party.
Okay, well, that's just nonsense, and it's not happening right now. But the Republicans are only a few seats away from regaining the House next year. And that's part of Kevin McCarthy's job to make sure that leadership is guiding them in the direction of becoming the majority again. And Liz Cheney, here's a question for you. Have you heard Liz Cheney defend herself? Have you heard Liz Cheney say, I want to stay in leadership? Have you heard anything from you? Do you know why
Nope.
You haven't heard that? Because Liz Cheney wants to leave. She doesn't want to be there. I talked to Scott Jennings earlier tonight. I don't think this column is out, but Scott's obviously a regular guest on the show. You see him occasionally on CNN. He's worked for Mitch McConnell and George W. Bush. And he told me he's writing a column that should be out. Maybe it is already, that everybody in this scenario sort of gets something that they're looking for. All right. Kevin McCarthy gets someone who's not going to keep poking the bear. And that's what's happening with Liz Cheney. It'd be one thing if she said what she said on January 6th. And by the way, I agreed with much of her position at that point. But to keep poking the bear, to keep going at it time and time again, that's not playing well with Republican members. Now, the part of what Mark McKinnon said there is true is the part about Liz Cheney. And this is what's baffling in the era of Trump. The part about Liz Cheney being twice as conservative as Elise Stefanik. Well, that's probably, boy, that sounds like it's pretty dramatic. Could that be true? It was on CNN. Well, in fact, it is true. And if I went and I looked at the votes, you track the votes from even before Donald Trump was president. I can't remember how long she has been in office, but she was there at least in 2015, 2016, or 2014, 2015. Her lifetime score from Heritage Action, which is one of the groups that rates lawmakers based on how they vote on conservative issues, is 48%. Now, that was before this session. 48%, Elise Stefanik, your new third in command for the Republicans. Liz Cheney's lifetime number is 98%.
Whoa.
There were things, I looked at the votes, I was actually surprised by this. Now, Elise Stefanik is a New Yorker, right? Mm-hmm. She voted against the tax cuts a few years ago. There were several votes that Donald Trump wanted her to vote on as a Republican that she did not support. as a Republican. Now, you might remember, and I was impressed, and I think a lot of people were impressed, when impeachment came along, Elise Stefanik, and I kind of remember her, I think I remember her from the Kavanaugh hearings as well. I could be wrong about that, but I remember because that the whole Kavanaugh thing got me very worked up and angry. And I get angry and difficult very often, but I thought it was ridiculous the way that that was being handled. And I think Congresswoman Stefanik did a pretty good job in that. So I understand the appeal because she's a fighter. People want fighters. But if you were to tell, let me ask this question. If you were to tell Donald Trump today, who's supporting this nominee, supporting the change in leadership, of course he is. He doesn't like what Liz Cheney had to say. They don't like each other. But if you were to tell him that this new member of leadership for the Republicans voted against some of his principal pieces of legislation, I think he would probably be surprised. I guess what I'm trying to tell you is he doesn't know that, and nobody's told him that. So
correct.
Elise Stefanik is, and this happens in politics, can I use the word opportunist to a certain extent? And this is happening all the time. So she has rallied to the cause here, and she realizes that she can raise a ton of money. Guess who else realizes that right now? Shh, don't tell anyone. Liz Cheney, from a different perspective. Liz Cheney is getting what she wants here. She wants out. Now, what the next mission and what she's going to, she's not leaving Congress. She's just leaving leadership. What is that going to mean for her? And I don't know what her, I think her numbers in Wyoming haven't been as high, but she's going to get something out of this because otherwise she wouldn't be doing this. Kevin McCarthy, get someone who's not going to poke the bear. So the point of referring to Scott Jennings a couple of minutes ago is I was checking in with Scott to say, look, this is what I'm hearing. Am I kind of on the right track? And he said, yes. So I felt pretty good about that. And the column will come out later today. It is fascinating because I guess, and this is where I to a certain extent, side with Congresswoman Cheney. It does seem utterly ridiculous to someone like me, who has been a conservative for my entire life, going back to high school, where I formed my ideology, who has supported what I thought were conservative principles for decades, and then to be told that if you're not on board with President Trump 100% of the time, you're a rhino. Well, guess who wasn't on board with President Trump 100% of the time? In fact, she was only on board about 75% of the time. Elise Stefanik, who is the new member of Republican leadership. So a lot of this stuff is just confusing, and it doesn't make sense. I get why Kevin McCarthy and Steve Scalise and the rest of Republicans are frustrated with Liz Cheney because she's doing it on purpose. She's not. If she didn't want to leave, she wouldn't have been doing all these things. Maybe she would have said what she did a couple of months ago, but she wouldn't have kept going. There was something that happened when these members were. Well, she talked ill of President Trump, and she said basically, if you support the lie of the election is stolen, there, you know, she doesn't accept that. So that's basically where she drew the distinction between her position and what Trump was saying, what maybe some of the other members were saying as well. So that pissed a lot of people off.
She directly blamed Trump for the January 6th riots, right?
I think she did as well. She drew more of a direct correlation between that. And Stefanik and other Republicans have been more vocal in their support for Donald Trump. But again, a lot of this stuff happens because you see where everything is headed. Now, it's not unreasonable for politicians, and you can make the strong case, and certainly I think it's apparent that Donald Trump has changed many of his political positions from the 80s and from the 90s. The chief criticism that I had of Donald J. Trump in 2016 is I didn't think he'd be conservative. I didn't think he was conservative at all. And he proved me wrong. He proved a lot of people wrong because, and I've said this before, he was more conservative certainly on the policy than a lot of Republicans have been, certainly Republican presidents. So it's an interesting dynamic. I know that the folks on CNN, they're going to load up with Mark McKinnon, who are going to basically say, and, you know, I guess he's a Republican, that the Republicans are over and done with. I don't know how you would even argue that based on what's happening right now in this country. I think there's a lot of momentum on the Republican side. Now, having said that, I'm still a little unsure what the GOP is about moving forward. What is their message? You know, this has been a problem, I think, for the Democrats. The Democrats' message was not even in existence last year. They didn't really need one because they had Donald Trump to run against.
Right.
In this particular case, I know Josh Hawley and other Republicans are about woke capitalism, and certainly those are things that we can discuss and I'm concerned about as well. But all those other conservative principles are not as apparent as they used to be. So it's just a straight, you know, politics is weird. It's a blood sport. They eat one another. Things change. We'll see where this goes. I understand everyone's perspective on this. I really do. I understand Elise Stefanik trying to take control of the mantle because that's what politicians do. They look for lanes. She's grabbing her lane right now. We have countless examples of that here in Missouri. One of them is a United States senator, right? So that happens, but it's crazy to see all the nastiness that's going on. All right, so that's behind the scenes. We'll talk about that a little bit more this afternoon. We've got a bunch of stuff coming up. Jazz Shaw is going to be on from Hot Air in the 5 o'clock hour, and I do want his perspective on that and some other things. In fact, here's one of the things that Jazz and I are going to be talking about. Do you guys know what BIPOC even means?
Nope.
You probably do because you saw this story earlier.
Vaguely, I'm aware.
BIPOC is Black, Indigenous, Latinx, Asian, or other people of color, right? So have you heard about the Cornell University rock climbing class? Jazz wrote about this today on Hot Air. Essentially, there was a BIPOC rock climbing class. In other words, no whites allowed. It's true. They wanted a rock climbing. Here's the story from the student newspaper. Cornell University students expressed support for racial segregation after the school allowed white students to enroll in a rock climbing class originally restricted to minority students. Students enrolled in the course objected to the move, telling the Cornell Daily Sun that segregating the class is a small step toward greater racial equality.
What?
Exactly. What in the hell? At the end of the day, there's an issue of inaccessibility for minorities in this white-centric sport. And BIPOC rock climbing is a small step toward desegregating that community, according to Matthew Gavieta, a junior and BIPOC rock climbing class instructor.
Is that a step forward?
Well,
they never elaborate.
No, it's not a step forward. The whole thing, what's happening in this country, it's happening with critical race theory. It's happening with nonsense like this. It's absolutely comical if it wasn't so serious. So we'll get into that a little bit more later this afternoon as well. We're going to check in with Sloan Martin in Minneapolis. There is a question now about one of the jurors in the Derek Chauvin case, which is kind of interesting. That's coming up next, 97.1 FM Talk.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
I got some Joe Biden audio, too, that I don't know if it's been disseminated too much, but some of it's just kind of weird.
That's why I'm asking people to continue to follow CDC guidelines.
Honest to God, I don't like making fun of Joe Biden just because he makes gaffes like that, but there were several in a row that were very uncomfortable, and he's going to be protected by a lot of that. Yeah, it was. I don't know if he was just having a bad day with the teleprompter or what was going on, but we've seen a little bit of this trend. I want to spend a little bit of time here this afternoon. I got a bunch of stuff to get to. We are loaded up on this show, and I'm glad to find out that it's Wednesday, because honestly, I thought it might be Thursday when I started the show. So now I got another show tomorrow before Friday. And Friday, we're going to be out and about at the Sugar Fire in Wentzville, the Reardon Roundtable at 3, Jane Duker, John Lamping, former Senator Lamping, former Chief of Staff for Mayor Slay, Jeff Rainford, all on the panel. Sue's going to be there. Andrew's going to be there. You can heckle. Yeah, come say hi at Sugar Fire in Wentzville. I want to spend a little time here on what's going on back in Minneapolis with the Derek Chauvin aftermath. Sloan Martin has been great with the coverage for the past really almost year. And thank you so much for everything, Sloan, because you've been on with me 4 or 5 times over the last year, and it's been great reporting. First and foremost, have things settled down in Minneapolis a little bit?
Absolutely. I mean, it's already been, past a week now that the fences and barricades have started to come down. There's really been no elevated kind of unrest that has happened whatsoever since the verdict happened on April 20th. They wanted to, authorities, I should say, public safety experts with the state, federal, and local agencies wanted to wait a little time to make sure, but those have since come down, particularly around the government center where the courtroom is. And you see the boards start to come off of businesses as well. So that's kind of been the way things are trending.
So now you have, and this happens with trials, but there are appeals for a new trial. Now, is this all related? Because my understanding, I think some of this is being discombobulated, Sloan. This isn't all related to now this notion that a juror has been revealed to have had, a little bit more connection with BLM and George Floyd than he admitted to in the Vora Dyer process.
That's right. That's a part of it. So I think that's a good way to start. There are multiple reasons why Derek Chauvin's attorney, Eric Nelson, is requesting a new trial. And a lot of it was things we've already heard before. The fact that the jury was not sequestered throughout the entire trial, the fact that it wasn't moved, the fact that Floyd's friend was allowed to plead the fifth and was not brought to the stand, things like that. But it does also include jury and prosecutorial misconduct. Now, we knew from this one juror, Brandon Mitchell, who has revealed his identity, he put on that questionnaire that he had a very favorable opinion of Black Lives Matter. And there's some contention about whether one of those questions on the questionnaire about protests in themselves was specific to Minnesota or specific to George Floyd and Derek Chauvin in this case itself, as opposed to the more broader criminal justice type of march commemorating the 57th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s March on Washington, which he did attend.
Well, let me play. I have some audio here, I think, from Brandon Mitchell, too, and here's what he said.
Either way, I was going to D.C. for this event, even if George Floyd was still alive.
It just happened to be that was a teacher chat because it was in 2020.
Correct. Yeah, both attorneys and the judge asked me all the questions they needed, and I answered them as truthfully as I could.
And there was nothing that you did that would have been interpreted as a protest to George Floyd or something like that?
Not even close.
So, Sloan, I've actually heard a couple of different legal perspectives today. One, this is not nearly enough to get a new trial, just that issue alone. The other being, absolutely, that's something that should, be cause for a new trial. So what? I know there's not a consensus yet, but what can you tell us about any of that?
Well, it's funny. I'm hearing a little bit more, at least from a lot of the defense attorneys that we tend to go to here locally. I'm tending to hear a lot of the former, that there is really, it would be very tough to get a new trial, that the system in itself knows just what a huge undertaking this was to begin with. And the fact that those are some typical pitfalls in jury trials, period. That's just kind of the way that things happen, where you try the best that you can and the way the process is set up. But sometimes things like that, discrepancies or what you want to call them, can surface in this case. That was according to a local defense attorney I talked to yesterday. And plus the fact that Nelson talks about this pervasive and prejudicial pretrial publicity. We heard from the judge that he didn't think there would be any greater chance of a fair trial anywhere else in the state of Minnesota because it would be impossible to avoid any of that pretrial publicity. And that is something that was really out of the hands of the court, too. So at least who I talked to said not only would it be a massive undertaking, but a lot of these jury decisions tend to carry weight in appeals courts here in Minnesota.
And there wasn't anything in that appeal that cited Maxine Waters at all, was there?
There was not, no. And you're right, that did come up with the judge after her comments when she was right here in the Twin Cities after Dante Wright was shot and killed by a Brooklyn Center police officer a little bit after that a couple of weeks ago. But no, that did not come up in the motion itself. There actually a lot of vagueness in this as well, because Nelson did also request what's called a Schwartz hearing. That's related to jury misconduct, where potentially someone like a Brandon Mitchell could come in to be questioned, but there was no other details that were listed in the motion.
Sloan Martin from WCCO up in Minneapolis. Again, thank you so much, Sloan, for everything, and I hope you're getting some sleep and things are settling down up there.
Yeah, we're recovering. Thank you.
Hey, take care. She's been awesome helping out with some of the details of that, so I just wanted to get her on just for a few minutes this afternoon. Dr. Fauci is creating more controversy, as you might imagine. Some of this stuff is just baffling to me, and I told you yesterday that my new hobby is driving by people who have masks on outdoors and shouting, "Take your mask off! You're outside!" Which, I'm not really joking about that. I'm having a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to it in the future, too, because I think it's idiotic, really, especially if you're double masking outside. But you can tell that there are more and more people, even in the mainstream media, that are getting frustrated with some of this, especially if they have kids. And I'll use Savannah Guthrie as an example over at the Today Show, because, Andrew, last week there was an interview with Dr. Fauci, and she sort of pressed a little bit on masks, right? And she cited her daughter. Mm-hmm. And this one, you can kind of tell, because if you think about what they're telling people to do, it makes no sense whatsoever. Now, first here is Fauci saying, like, we're in the, I think he says we're in the sixth inning.
Yep, and bottom of the sixth.
Now, here's a question for him, though. Okay, is this a seven-inning game or a nine-inning game? The Cardinals are playing 2 7-inning games today. If we're in the sixth inning, we're really close.
We've really got to not declare victory prematurely. So we're in the late innings, but it's not over. That's the thing we really got to get people to appreciate. We're going in the right direction. We're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. But now's not a time to declare victory. It's a time to get more and more people vaccinated. Just the way the president said today, we want to get to that goal. It's a doable goal, and I believe we'll get there.
So you think the seventh, the eighth inning, or late innings? What inning are you talking about?
How about the bottom of the sixth?
Bottom
try
of
that
the sixth.
One,
Rolf. All right, I'll go with the bottom of the sixth.
Yeah, I'd go with the bottom of the eighth, personally, maybe even the top of the ninth. Now, that was with Wolfie last night on CNN. Here's Savannah Guthrie. Basically, the broad outline here is, I'll give you a personal example. My daughter, 6 years old, she's probably going to go to Krause Farms in a horse camp. We live right by there. She went a couple of summers ago and had a blast. She wants to do it again. Now, she did this in July of 2019. It was 100 degrees, just ridiculously hot in the middle of the summer. The CDC wants kids in those settings outdoors at summer camps to wear masks.
And let me say on the subject of kids, because summer camps are coming up and a lot of parents are looking forward to sending those kids out and hoping they have a great summer since they weren't able to last summer. But the CDC guidelines right now for kids in summer camps say masks must be worn at all times, even outdoors, by everyone, including vaccinated adults and children as young as 2 years old.
So dumb.
Should stay 3 feet apart, even outdoors. My question to you is, given what research shows about transmission outside, about the low risk of serious illness in children, are these CDC guidelines excessive?
See, if Savannah had a talk show and she wasn't, doing a news program, in theory a news program, she would have said, Dr. Fauci, that's about the most idiotic thing that I could ever even imagine. It's almost as dumb as people wearing two masks in Manhattan. I see that all the time. So Fauci even laughs a little here.
I wouldn't call them excessive, Savannah, but they certainly are conservative.
Savannah, first of all.
That drives me nuts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Savannah. But also, she says he's making the case that those guidelines are conservative,
given
the fact that we have a lot of vaccinated people and kids aren't getting or spreading this.
I wouldn't call them excessive, Savannah, but they certainly are conservative. And I think what you're going to start to see is really in real time, continually reevaluating that for its practicality. Because you're right. People look at that and they say, well, is that being a little bit too far now?
Yeah,
right.
Because aren't we supposed to be? We've been told, people have been preaching for a year, follow the science. The science doesn't suggest those CDC guidelines are too sensible for little kids outside in 90-degree heat running around with masks.
Yeah.
Yes, Savannah, you've asked me that question a couple of times before.
I'm asking for two kids named Vale and Charlie, age 6 and 4.
Yeah, well, you're right. The CDC makes decisions based on science. They will continually reevaluate that. You're right. It looks a bit strict, a bit stringent. But that's the reason why they keep looking at that and trying to, reevaluate real time whether or not that's the practical.
Yeah, I don't need real time. I have real time, and I'm in the top of the ninth. And the real time is kids should not be wearing, first of all, they shouldn't be wearing masks outside at all. I don't think they should be wearing masks in school anymore. But at summer camp, when it's 100 degrees and they're outside, you know things are turning when the liberal members of the mainstream media, and I like Savannah because I used to work with her 20-something years ago. God, I think it was 30 years ago. She was in Columbia, Missouri, KMIZ, where I started my illustrious film critic career. I used to do reviews every Friday night on Channel 17 in Columbia, and she was there for a short time. A lot of people don't know that. But you can tell they're getting impatient, too, with the insanity out there. Hey, you know who's going to join us here? Bill Gates is getting a divorce, and I think it's gazillions of dollars on the line. Susan Ward, Sue, is coming up to give us some divorce advice for
Love
Bill Gates.
Her.
Next on 97.1 FM Talk. Sue's News, new feature, coming up at 4 o'clock. I think that's delivered by Sue.
It's brought to you by Sue.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm not sure you knew that.
That's coming up here. Also, David Stokes, who is at the Show Me Institute. Something, this is a really fascinating and sort of disgusting story. There are homeowners who use the PACE loans to fix up their houses, and they're trapped in debt, and now the homes could be sold at auction. So we'll talk to David coming up here at 4:25 and a bunch of other things. You know what we didn't get to yesterday was the jumping worms, and I'm sort of fascinated by that. We do have someone coming up in the 5 o'clock hour on that. If you haven't heard
totally
about that,
fascinated by that.
I didn't even know that existed. And is there confirmation that they do exist, or is there just a theory?
They are on the Illinois side, and they're worried that they will get over to our side, like coming by mulch or something.
Because they'll jump over the river.
Yeah, right, exactly. So it's kind of like that. You remember when, and we don't see these anymore. Remember when they used to have all the billboards about wood and not bringing wood in from, what am I thinking of? There was something that was infesting the wood.
Yes, because like termites or whatever could have gotten in.
It wasn't termites, but it was something along
those lines. You're talking about the ash borer, the emerald ash borer.
Yeah. That was it. But
and
we haven't heard about
it. It decimated a lot of trees, so we're hoping these things don't. What's the fish that get the Asian carp?
Asian carp, jumping.
I'm telling you, we got some bad stuff.
All right, Bill and Melinda Gates are getting a divorce. We found that out this week. And they have a little bit of cash between the two of them, and they have a 66,000 square foot mansion. I thought it'd be interesting to find out exactly how that divorce case might go. And I have two ways to introduce my next guest, Susan Ward, who is Queen of the Universe, or Susan L. Ward. Which is preferred? Because I was told yesterday Queen of the Universe might be the preferred intro here, Susan.
How about just Susan L. Ward, divorce attorney extraordinaire?
And are you representing Bill or Melinda here? Can you confirm?
I wish. I'm not licensed in the state of Washington, but that's a big divorce, although I'm not sure I can follow jumping worms very well today.
So how do you even begin? Look, you work with, I'm sure, some big cases even here in St. Louis, but when you have the fourth largest fortune in the world, doesn't that make things a little bit more complicated?
It's funny. When there is a lot of money, it can be really simple because there's a lot of money to go around, or it can get complicated when you have this much money, or even when you get into really high asset divorces that involve how their financial structures are created to protect money. So, for instance, the foundation in the Gates case, has $50 billion or something amazing in it. Which is not part of their personal wealth. It is what they have given to, but it can't be touched as part of the divorce. However, their wealth is also spread into many different financial vehicles. So they have all people at high levels are looking to either avoid tax, shelter tax, look for tax credits. So, they'll have a mix of real estate, which can be appraised and is identifiable. They will have cash. The Gateses have $650,000 worth of cars.
There's
some people over here in the Midwest that I was involved with, and they in fact had that kind of car collection. It was unbelievable. It was just a list that was extraordinary. But the difficulty comes in how these I would call them subsets of assets are formed into LLCs or put into trust or structured such that then if they can't be divided because they have already been protected in another format, that's where your complications come because you can't undo some of these things. For instance, the money that the Gates have in their foundation, that's an irrevocable gift. You can't get it back. You can't include it as part of the marital estate. Sometimes people will put money in their children's names in order to create estate planning matters. And then there becomes an argument about, well, you over contributed to our kids, trust or account or whatever it might be. So it isn't the dollars that are difficult. It's how they may be structured,
because in this case, one or two million.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and this, you mentioned real estate. So they have mansions all across the country from the last three decades. And Sue, you were even saying this. So there's this one that's in Medina. I mentioned the 66,000 square foot mansion. And this thing is worth $130 million. It's dubbed Xanadu 2, 66,000 square feet. The property tax bill alone is $1 million a year. So then you have all the other mansions. I mean, I guess this could be amicable if they just start, you get this house, you get that house, I get this house, you get that house. Maybe that's how it falls down. I don't know.
Hey, Susan, it's Sue. I have a question for you. Do people with this kind of wealth, do they generally see a divorce coming? In other words, Do they prepare for it and organize themselves? Or I guess sometimes it could just be bitter and then it's all just a mess.
No, but it's a good question because I think along the lines, Susan, what you were just saying, that the lawyers surrounding these two probably had at least some protections built in case something happens, right?
Correct. And I don't think, in answer to Sue's specific point, I don't think that most of these types of wealth are built on the preparation for divorce. Now, some of the news stories have mentioned that the Gateses may have a prenuptial agreement that might identify some things. But, you know, the eye with this kind of estate and management of assets is on protection financially and tax protection. So it isn't always with an eye to divorce unless there was a late marriage. You know, these guys have been married like 27 or 29 years. If they got married later in life, the prenuptial would exclude lots of things. But if the bulk of the wealth was created during the marriage and all of a sudden, if the reports are true, the people are just like, well, you know, we really don't want to go forward now after we're empty nesters. We didn't really see it coming. They didn't plan for divorce. They planned for financial protection. Right. And as we've seen in the reports, you know, there was already a transfer of $1 billion worth of stock. You know, and this is monopoly money. This is not your usual case. I mean, a high dollar case in, you know, around most of us as divorce lawyers is just going to be several million. You know, I can't even imagine $1 billion.
Yeah, that's right. So this is one line that I saw. I think this was in the LA Times story about this, that the documents requested a trial date for April of next year, but there was a prediction that they'll pursue private mediation to stay out of the public court. So that's something they can do?
Absolutely. And that would be recommended. There is no way that the court system, meaning the judge with a regular docket, I don't think a judge could handle this, not because of lack of competence, but because of time. There is no way to handle this kind of a case and this kind of volume. Mediation would be 100% prepared. And then what happens is it's mediated by a person or a team, and then each party, husband and wife, have their own separate team of counsel.
That makes sense.
So they're getting supported and coached through the mediation. They're not left on their own.
Which is what you would want.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
I mean, I recommend it all the time. So if I'm not the mediator myself for some cases and somebody comes to me and wants mediation, I recommend to them that they need mediation coaching. And as a mediator, I tell people, and that is part of our ethics as mediators, you are to tell people that you should also seek independent advocacy so that you understand what you're coming to the table in mediation, what your rights might range to be.
There she is, Queen of the Universe, Susan L. Ward, stlfamilylaw.com. It'd be so much more fun, though, if this thing was going to be really public and nasty, and then
no,
we'd probably have
no.
you on for updates all the time. But, Susan, thanks for the information this afternoon. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for the opportunity. Take care.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.